Welcome back to the D-Fly and Dixie podcast featuring Big Ten Network, ESPN, Inside Lacrosse analyst, my old buddy, Mark Dixon. I'm your host, Dan Flynn. Another great show on tap. So, Dixie, let's get it. Dixie, I enjoyed watching your game with Joe B doing the Maryland-Virginia game. It felt like a big game. I haven't had that midseason feeling like that since the old Inside Lacrosse, Big City Classic, you know, face-off classic days.
It was a lot of fun. And it had the feel of a May playoff game, if not championship weekend. First of all, tremendous weather. It was in the mid-70s, which was awesome. So, yeah, terrific weather. A really nice venue. I think that would be perfect for a quarterfinal round of the NCAA tournament. Two great teams and a great crowd and a vocal crowd, like a crowd that was amped up for the game. I think when you take into consideration, you had number one versus number two, two really good fan bases, and coming out of COVID, you know, what was missed over the last 2 years, you know, year and a half, 2 years. It all just came together to make for a really, really cool event. And we did the Maryland-Virginia game. Prior to us, it was Hampton-Sydney Catholic. After us, it was Duke Towson. So it was a really, really great day of college lacrosse.
Yeah, it certainly looked like it. I was telling you earlier before we started recording, my son, my six-year-old, had his first ever lacrosse clinic, putting on the gear and going out. And it was right during that time. It was from 3:30 to 4:30 that day. So I recorded the game for my DVR. And because of all the basketball and everything else I was doing, I didn't have a chance to watch it. And I knew the outcome. I usually don't go back and watch lacrosse games that I know the outcome of. But I did. On Monday night, I sat down and watched. And it was really enjoying it. It was a high-paced game, lots of goals. You guys did a really nice job calling it. And it was just a fun, it was a great setting. And we need more of that. We need more of that. I don't know if, again, a lot of things came together, as you mentioned, the weather, the timing, the fact that it was number one versus two. It was sort of between the two, you know, between Charlottesville and College Park, the venue. So a lot of that stuff kind of was tailor-made for it. But it was fun to watch on TV, great TV product. And Maryland looked really good. Really good.
It was a perfect storm. And what was neat about it was at Audi Field near our broadcast area, the floor where we were, our suites, and a lot of them were rented out by Virginia and Maryland fans. Obviously, the Maryland fans were much happier after the game, but even the Virginia folks recognized that it was a, you know, mid-March game and there's a lot to be learned. Joe B was dressed to the nines. And purple was the theme, and the purple shoes were a major hit. But what was cool was when we were done the game and we were leaving, there were a lot of fans that were saying hello and complimenting us on our work. And the way that this normally goes is, you guys are great. Joe, we love you. You're the best, blah, blah, blah. Can we get a picture with you? And I'm normally the one taking the picture. But this time they were like, no. Dixie, you got to get in there too. You know, love your podcast. And, you know, you've done such a, you know, so it was like, oh, wow. You know, it's only taken, you know, 20 plus years, but I'm finally accepted. This is wonderful. But Joe is the star of our broadcast and rightly so. But I thought Maryland would win the game, but it was going to be close. They bulldozed Virginia. They, from the opening faceoff, when Luke Wehrman picked it up and whipped it over to Keegan Kahn, he stuck it. Like, they just set the tone. And Virginia made a couple of runs because they're a great team with some great players. But it was my biggest takeaway was Maryland made Virginia look slow. How's that happen? Maryland just played with such purpose, such energy, determination. You know, you reference, you know, you look back and you look at the 2017 national championship game where Maryland beat Ohio State. Then you look at the 2018 regular season Big Ten battle between the two. Ohio State beat Maryland. Like, they remember that Memorial Day loss and came out and took it to the Terps. Maryland did that to Virginia on Saturday. But as I mentioned, still early in the season, or, you know, midpoint of the season or wherever the heck we are, a lot of lacrosse left to be played. And both of these teams will take something from that game, learn from it, get better, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I think if you're Virginia, you've got to get more complimentary scoring. You know, you got Schellenberger and Moore are the two headliners, but, you know, where can your depth scoring come from in a game against a team like the University of Maryland? And Maryland showed off their depth and showed off their balance of scoring with what, six or seven guys having multiple goals in the game. Great atmosphere, terrific lacrosse event, and was really, really proud to be a part of it.
As a lacrosse promoter, I'm curious what the crowd was like for the Duke Towson game. How many people stick around? Were there a lot of Duke and Towson fans there as well, sort of amongst the crowd? Because when we used to do that, you would really appeal to every fan base and consider it like a full event day. And I'm just curious how many people stuck around.
I can't answer that. I had other things going on. So I left after the game. Walking to my car, I passed what seemed to be more Duke parents. But maybe, you know, from where I was parked was where they were, you know, pre-gaming and tailgating, and walked past them. So I really can't answer that question. I didn't stick around.
Answer my question. Bad week for our Blue Jays, Dix. They lost two games last weekend. They got to turn this around quick and probably win the Big Ten if they want to make the NCAA tournament. And then the other team that keeps surprising the preseason pundits, the Princeton Tigers, keep climbing the rankings. They're up to number two this week in the IL media poll.
You know, Hopkins, rough weekend, losing for the first time since 1969 at home against Navy and losing for the first time ever at Delaware. I question the scheduling. You know, the Friday, Sunday in the middle of the season, I get, you know, they did it a month ago, beginning of the year with the Towson Friday night, Georgetown on a Sunday, but to do it twice against, you know, those two teams, I question that. The other thing is Hopkins ran pretty much their first midfield the entire game on Friday against Navy. And I'm not sure that's a proper strategy when you have a quick turnaround, you know, less than 48 hours later playing against Delaware. But yeah, it's not Hopkins almost has to win the AQ in the Big Ten. No, they have to win the AQ in the Big Ten, at least as we sit here recording this today on March 24th. You know, that's what it's looking like. Princeton, yeah, they continue to surprise. But let me tell you, maybe a bigger surprise in the Ivies is Harvard. When you talk about the Crimson, they knocked off Boston University a couple nights ago.
Perfect segue to our midweek action, Dix. And
okay,
that number 15 Harvard in a battle of top 20 teams in Boston. Number 15 Harvard knocks off number 12 BU, knocks them out of from the unbeaten ranks with a 13-10 win. Austin Madronic was great with 5 points. Sam King, is that your guy? Sam King, a Baltimore guy?
Sam King, yeah, played club with my oldest Matt, and just a kid who originally was a Denver commit, wasn't heavily recruited, and just kept getting better and better to the point where, in the 2019 Under Armour tournament, he was the most valuable player in a tournament that featured Brendan O'Neill, Cole Herbert, you know, some really other big time recruits in that 2020 class. He was the guy, you know, that was the best player in that tournament. So yeah, Sam King's legit talent.
Yeah. And he's four goals in that win over BU. And then they got great play from their faceoff guy, Stephen Cucurullo. They've won 67% of their faceoffs. It's great to see Boston having a big game like that. The city of Boston having top 20 lacrosse action.
Well, and BU is a program I got to know a little bit better back this past fall. And Ryan Poley and his staff do a wonderful job. They are a real threat in the Patriot League this year with the up and down nature of the Patriot. But you're right. It's I will say this, BU. They pride themselves because in that little corridor, you've got Harvard, Boston University, Boston College, and Northeastern. And the BU folks will be quick to tell you that we're the only Boston We're the only one that says Boston, Massachusetts in our address. They're very proud of that. But Harvard went down the road and got a big win and really continues to roll.
There's a lot of great games this weekend, Vix. And I normally would try to cover five or six. I have an extensive list this week for you.
Oh, my God.
There are three top 10 matchups to highlight the schedule.
Cracking the whip.
And a full list of some other big games that are not necessarily feature top 20 teams as conference season heats up. So let's get right into it. And the first one that I know you'll be following is number 16 Army, who's 6-2 overall, 2-1 in the Patriot League already, will travel to Baltimore to face the Loyola Greyhounds, who are 2-0 in the Patriot League at 1:00 on Saturday.
And, you know, this is an Army team coming off of a tough loss to Lehigh at home last weekend. Loyola was able to turn a halftime deficit to a nice third quarter run to beat Bucknell at home. Turnovers will be huge in this game. Both teams have been bitten by unforced errors and some turnovers. So who can limit turnovers? You look at the faceoffs in this game. I think Loyola has the advantage there. Goaltending will be huge, but this is a critical Patriot League matchup, not only for qualification for the Patriot League tournament, but for jockeying into seeding position. So it's on. Conference play is on.
You mentioned the Lehigh Mountain Hawks and their win over Army. They host a top 20 matchup. They're ranked number 19 this week. They're 4-2. And they will play the number 5 Georgetown Hoyas, who sit at 6-1 on the season. This should be a great non-conference game, and it's available at 1:00 on Saturday.
Yeah, and both these – well, where's this game being played?
In D.C.?
At Lehigh. Okay, so that'll be ESPN Plus. Army, Loyola, ESPN Plus. Yeah, look, this is a Lehigh team that's starting to click. You know, nice win over Army this past weekend. So they're hosting the Hoyas with some mojo, and Georgetown dispatched of Utah last weekend, 16-6. They continue to progress, get better. The word that popped into my head was fun for this game, because it is such a higher profile out of conference matchup. This, you know, late in the season, we're going to see a couple more as the season progresses, but in a time where the conference play is starting to kick in, it's good to get a treat here, like a French fry at the bottom of the bag, you know, that you didn't hit first. You know, there's some great out of conference stuff left. So, you know, you talk about, you know, Sisselberger at the faceoff dot versus James Riley. That'll be a terrific battle. Two very physical, tough defenses. Both have experienced terrific goaltenders. You know, who's going to be able to execute better offensively in this one, I think, is going to be critical to the success of the winner or the loser, or for the winner in this game.
Perhaps the biggest game of the weekend has number 4 Cornell, who's undefeated, 6-0, 1-0 in the Ivy League, traveling to Franklin Field to take on the number 6 ranked Penn Quakers, stand at 3-2, 0-1 in the Ivy League after their loss to Princeton in a sensational one-goal game last weekend. And before we talk about that game, Dixie, let's bring in our guest this week, Cornell head coach Connor Busick. Connor, thank you for joining us. It's been fun watching your team so far this season.
Appreciate it, guys. I'm excited to be here with you.
So no one knew what to expect, really, in 2022 from the Ivy League. Everyone's season was cut short in 2020. And the Ivy Leagues were not able to return in 2021. But at Cornell, you had a lot of other unique circumstances. The then head coach, Peter Milliman, moves over to Johns Hopkins. You get the head coaching position, the youngest coaching staff in Division I lacrosse. What has the last 18 months been like for you and for Cornell lacrosse?
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind, I think, from the get-go, you know, being early in the pandemic, not really knowing what was going to come next, and you know, having Pete leave, and then taking over this position and kind of starting over But, you know, without the connectivity that we're used to, without the day-to-day interaction with our players, with our coaching staff, with our recruits, it was unique. And so I think the nice part is, you know, for us being a young coaching staff, no one really had a playbook. You know, everybody was starting from scratch and figuring out how to just feel their way through it and make it work. And so certainly was a lot of things that in a short period of time. But, you know, if there was a time that it were to happen, you know, wasn't the worst. You know, there wasn't any place to be. There wasn't any place to go. It was a lot of time to think, to figure things out, to talk to people, to you know, take the time to make it look how we want to over the last 18 months. And obviously, you know, it's nice to get back out there. Nice to be competing again now.
You're a Cornell graduate, an alum who had an illustrious career as a Big Red, and then you become an assistant coach. When you were pursuing the head coaching job and became a candidate, who were some of the people that you reached out to maybe for some guidance, you know, some prep, if you will, in that arena?
Yeah, honestly, it happened so quickly. It wasn't even necessarily in the pursuit process as much as, you know, after the fact, you know, trying to reach out to a lot of guys that I know and respect and trust in this business, while trying to figure out how to hire an assistant. How does that process go? How do you make sure you respect everybody's time, but give be honest and genuine with them? And so, you know, there's a handful of people, and it goes from the guys that I've worked with and worked for, you know, and Pete and you know, Coach DeLuca and Coach Tambroni, guys like that. But, you know, even Coach Rogalski, who I've known since I was a young kid, and Coach Stagnetti, and guys like that that I've grown up around, have been helpful in this process and, you know, shed some light on those smaller things that, you know, I was fortunate. You know, I came into this position and I've been in the same place. And so you only know it one way, but fortunate to have a lot of people around that were very helpful throughout that process and, you know, guiding me and, you know, answering questions whenever those came up.
So Coach, you're at your alma mater. You're given this great opportunity to continue this great tradition and legacy of Big Red Real Cross. And you're getting to do it with one of your former teammates, classmates, Jordan Stevens. What's that mean to you? And how do you take on that responsibility and that opportunity?
Yeah, it's unique to have the opportunity to work with Jordan. And obviously, we've grown up together. It's been cool, you know, for the better part of the last 10, 12 years, we've been together and doing it side by side. And for me to have him by my side is invaluable. You know, a guy that cares as much about this program as I do, a guy that respects this program and knows its traditions as well as I do, a guy who has a very clear vision of what this program is and when it's at its best. And so on every front, it's great to have somebody else who you're not necessarily teaching, but you're debating what, you know, the merits of it and when it's best and how to utilize it in the best way possible. And that's in coaching our team. That's in sending a message and making sure that we're doing the right things as a program and representing correctly. It's in recruiting. It's in everything. And so for us, the cool part about coaching at our alma mater is it's a place that gave us so much, that the 4 years we spent here were life-changing and continue to, you know, change our lives forever. And so for us, it's paying it forward. It's giving other young men the opportunity to have the same experience that we did. It's about, you know, making sure that we honor the traditions of this place that's one of the most historic programs in the country, while also continuing to build on that. How do we push forward into the future while honoring the guys before us and making sure that tradition carries on? So it's a really unique and to be honest, you know, stressful at times because it's so close to home. It's so close to our hearts position to be in, but certainly one that we're grateful for and you know, lucky to have the staff that I have and have the job that I have. Certainly we get to collaborate on a lot and again, pay it forward to the next generation of Cornell lacrosse.
You still play professionally in the Premier Lacrosse League. And not only do you play, but you're one of the better players in that league. How do you balance still being a professional lacrosse player and being now the head coach of Cornell University?
Sure. It's a lot. I'd say there's only so many hours in a day. And so it's just about prioritizing and making sure that schedule is exact from the time I get up in the morning to the time I go to bed. It's lacrosse, something or other, whether it's working out, whether it's, you know, getting my body right, or whether it's, you know, tape and getting our guys in the best position to win games. And so, again, fortunate to have the opportunity because I think both my playing ability and my coaching ability benefit from having that perspective and continuing to play and continuing to be around you know, some of the best lacrosse players, best lacrosse minds, you know, in the game, while also being able to be around our guys and lend that perspective of, from, you know, still having a helmet on. And so for me, although it's a lot, it's certainly, you know, it's time consuming on both ends, and you kind of burn at both ends. Fortunate, you know, it gives me that perspective, like I said. And the best part is, you know, whether it's a USA weekend, whether it's a PLL weekend, you know, I get to be chopping it up, talking shop on my free time where I'm not, you know, quote unquote at work. And I get to turn around and bring that right back. So it is professional development every day of the year, which is pretty cool.
I want to ask you about one of your guys, John Piatelli. He is a two-time captain. He's been one of your top scorers. He's having a great season. He has been nominated for the Senior Class Award, which is a great honor that you won when you were a senior. What's a guy like that mean to the Big Red program?
So much. You know, he's a guy that from the day he stepped on this campus, you know, he was special. You know, he's got a unique sensibility to him where he's not too high, he's not too low. He's just so poised and composed. And, you know, he doesn't, he's not a yeller, he's not a screamer. He's just a guy that takes it all in and is able to, you know, synthesize what he's seeing, what he's doing, and really manage the flow. And so as a young guy, he was, you know, a guy that was along for the ride, so to speak, but kind of had that sensibility to him. Now that he's in front of the room and he's one of our leaders, he's a guy that we lean on heavily, just really manages how everybody's, you know, going about their business. Make sure that when he's going to hold you accountable, you hear it, you understand it and you appreciate it because he does all those things. But also just one of the hardest workers, one of the toughest guys on our roster, just, you know, never complaining, never upset, just always working to get better. And you know, it even comes as yesterday he popped in my office and just wanted to talk about that. Hey, you know, once the season gets going, things get rolling fast. And, you know, he took a second and realized that, hey, my 5 years here is coming to an end here pretty quickly. And how can I be better on the field, off the field? What can I be doing to help this team? And so he has those abilities to step outside of what you just do the day to day. It's easy to get lost in all that. And again, he's working as hard as any in the classroom, on the field as a leader. But to have that awareness to step back and be curious, what else can I be doing? How do I make sure I don't miss anything? Is really unique for a guy his age. And so he brings so much to our team. And again, a guy that I've been fortunate to coach from the time he stepped on campus, and a guy that, you know, I will continue to lean on is one of those guys that I've grown up with and seen him grow. So it's been a pretty cool relationship between us. And certainly he continues to grow into a phenomenal player. You know, I think he's one of the most underrated in the country, and he continues to prove that week in and week out.
Defensively, you guys have done a great job this year. You've had some high scoring games, but it just seems like Cornell is a little bit more comfortable in those 12-11 situations versus 21-20, which we just saw Princeton and Penn last weekend. How would you best describe your defense and the defensive philosophy of Cornell?
Yeah, you know, it's aggressive and it's unified. Those guys are playing hard and they're doing what they can. And the nice part is we have a veteran group back there. You know, we've got a third-year starter in our goalie and, you know, Dom Doria and Gavin Adler and, you know, Joe Bartolotto and Harry Bardwell. And we've got so many guys that have played a lot of years and really grown up in the system. And so, again, coming off of a long hiatus to come back and to pick up where they left off and to be working to just keep, you know, bringing this group together and growing up and while bringing along some of the young guys, it's been really impressive to see. You know, Coach Stevens does such an outstanding job with that group and pours his heart and soul into that. And so it's great to see that group really taking the strides that we expected them to, but it doesn't come from just, you know, great talent or you know, hard coaching. It's been really watching guys mature in that system, coach kind of dialing in how he wants that group to play, you know, having a leader to backstop us in the net. And as those pieces come together, it's been really exciting to watch. And I think the cool part is we're just kind of scratching the surface of where that group's going. A group that hasn't gotten a whole lot of respect over the years that is really coming to its own and week to week getting better and better. It's been cool to see. And like I said, I think there's some young guys that are just starting to get their footing as we get, you know, 5-6 games in and expect that group just to keep improving from here on out.
Another young guy who seems to really have found his footing is CJ Kirst. A lot was expected of him and he seems to be delivering. He's a leading scorer, 19 goals, 9 assists. As he and John seem to lead your offense, what have you seen from, you know, your offensive unit And what do you expect from the Quakers this weekend?
Yeah, they're starting to gel, you know, in our, in terms of our offensive unit, you know, a lot of young guys and graduating some stellar players, you know, when you start with Jeff Teat and go on down through, you know, Cooper Telesco, Fletcher, on and on that, you know, and then we lost John Lombardi, you know, a few weeks ago. And so he hasn't been in the lineup. You know, when we lose that type of veteran presence and obviously generational talent, you get a little concerned. But the group that we have now is growing into their own. And a guy like CJ obviously makes it, you know, Teeter was on campus last weekend for the game and having that conversation with him. I mentioned that, you know, the only thing that made it a little less scary losing a guy like 51 is being able to put a guy like CJ in who loves lacrosse. He loves competing. He loves playing. He's out there shooting every night. It's fun to watch him play. And so, again, I think that's a young group who's growing up week by week. And I would argue Yale was our best performance to date. And again, wasn't our highest scoring necessarily, but we were efficient. We did what we needed to do. You know, we saw these guys buying into a six-man offense, not just, hey, I'm going to run by this guy and score, I'm going to flex my muscles, but really using the perimeter, doing the little things. And so proud of the way this group is growing up. And the reality is we've got a lot of young guys that, you know, Mikey Long was one of our veterans after playing five games. And that's obviously, you don't say that very often. And obviously having John as the veteran to really guide this group has been helpful. But all in all, I think they're starting to mesh. I think they're starting to grow together. And, you know, this Penn team's great. You know, they're doing an awesome job. They're competing. Obviously, the record maybe doesn't indicate just how good they are. But, you know, one goal games with some of the best teams in the country and certainly a defense that's unified and plays together and plays hard. So they're going to test us, you know, start to finish this week. And for us, it's the hope is we just keep taking that step week in and week out, keep getting better. Certainly we don't expect to peak here anytime soon, but certainly you're seeing it week to week. I think if you watch the tape that this group is playing together, they're making better decisions. The spacing is better. The timing is better. And the hope is, you know, that continues on through May.
You are the youngest coach in Division I men's lacrosse. And that means you're not that much older than some of your players. And now with the COVID year, that gap could be even closer. What are the challenges, if any, of being young and more, you know, closer to the age of your players than farther away from it?
Sure. You know, I think there are some challenges. You know, I think there's inherent just, you know, putting that separation there. I'd say I've grown into that over the years because, you know, my first year out, I was the volunteer while three classes of guys had played with me. And so, you know, they saw me more as their peer than their coach. And quite honestly, we've embraced it. We think it helps us relate to our guys. As long as there's that understanding, that respect level, the rest is awesome because the hope is they're, you know, we're easy to talk to. The hope is they understand that we're here for their best interest. You know, we're not in this to talk down at them, to talk, you know, to make them feel differently than us. But the reality is we were in their shoes and not that long ago. And so we understand some of the struggle that is and some of the challenges that come along with being a Cornell student athlete. We're, you know, like I talked about, just leading this program, our heart is in, you know, Cornell lacrosse being the best version of Cornell lacrosse that can possibly be. And these guys get that. It resonates with them. It resonates with recruits. And so for us, you know, we're young and what we might lack in experience, I think we understand what their experience is. And that connection point has gone a long way in helping our guys, I think, push the next level. And I think it will continue to do so. And so honestly, yeah, at this point, I hope that's something that I never lose as I get older and maybe that age gap continues to grow.
Coach, thanks for your time today. Before we let you go, we have one more question. We asked this to all the coaches. You are, as you mentioned, living, breathing, eating, sleeping lacrosse as both a coach, which is a full-time responsibility, and as a professional player. But when you want to get away from the game, when you want to get away from lacrosse, what does Coach Busick do to relax? Are you a music guy? Do you watch TV? Do you stream movies? Like, what's your getaway?
Yeah, my getaway, I think, is just relaxing with friends and family. You know, I like movies, I like TV, but a lot of it tends to be pretty mindless, you know, putting it on the background to kind of just turn off for a little bit. But certainly friends and family, you know, going cool places is a huge part of what I do to kind of separate from lacrosse for a little bit, to turn off for a little bit. And those people help me recharge a little bit and, you know, just get back to relaxing. It's nice not to be Coach Buse or Connor Busick for a minute, the player. It's nice to just be, you know, one in the crowd and relaxing, enjoying everybody's company.
Favorite TV shows? What are you watching?
So, you know, as a mindless TV show, I put on the background a lot is The Office. You know, it's always on TV whenever you flip it on. It's a good thing you get home from practice at 8:30 and you have a little dinner and sit on the couch. It's an easy one to flip on and doze off to or to kind of, you know, check out to. Seinfeld the same way. Big fan of those kind of mindless comedies that you don't have to necessarily be following along episode to episode, but certainly can appreciate it whenever you hop in.
Big fans of those shows too. I appreciate that. Thank you so much for your time this week and spending some time with us on the Defline Dixie podcast. Best of luck to you this weekend in your game against the Quakers and throughout the rest of the season. And we hope to talk to you again sometime this year.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me on.
It was really nice to talk to him. It seemed like when I mentioned John Piatelli, he got a little emotional. It sounds like he almost is like a little brother to him kind of thing. You know, you think of coaches' relationship, you know, some of the coaches we had where they might be like father figures. But because of that age, I'm glad you asked that question about the age and relating to the players. Some of these guys might seem more like little, almost like younger brothers, big brother type relationship with the coach than a father figure, which is traditional what you think of.
When you think about Cornell, too, the last handful of coaches, Dave Petromala, Jeff Tambroni, and DeLuca, Peter Milliman, their head coaches elsewhere. You know, Petro was the head coach at Hopkins, Jeff, you know, Penn State, Ben, Delaware, Milliman, Johns Hopkins. But what's unique about Connor Busick is he's a Cornell graduate. I don't know, and we didn't ask him this because I didn't want to put him on the spot, but, you know, Cornell could be lifetime for him.
Sure.
He could be the next Richie Moran.
Which would be a really cool thing to be, right?
Yeah.
If I could be like Richie Moran, I'd want to be like Richie Moran. And I don't have any affiliation with Cornell. That's a legend. It's a great spot to be in. It's a program where you can win and get to the Final Four. And it would be it's your alma mater.
Right.
That's where you want to be. I mean, you can make that the best job in lacrosse.
Especially
for Connor Busick, you know? So I wish him well. He seems like he's really got it together there, too.
Put together. Great head of hair, too. Great head of hair. I was very jealous of his hair.
Yeah, they got a good one there. They got a really good one there.
Right.
So about the game, Dix. They're going to play Penn Quakers. Penn is number 6 coming in this game. They're 3-2, 0-1 in the Ivy League. They're going to host Cornell, who's undefeated, number 4 ranked in the country in a big top 10 matchup, the biggest game of the week, really. And this will be on ESPN Plus at 1:00.
Yeah, Penn, Sam Hanley, what do you have, 8 assists last weekend? Yeah. 3 goals and 8 assists.
3 goals, 8 assists.
I mean, that's a season for some guys. And he was able to do that in one afternoon. You know, I think Cornell is a little bit more comfortable with those 12-11, 13-12 kind of scores. The Cardiac Quakers have proven that they can score a ton of goals, play an up-tempo style. You know, they're fine either way. But, you know, the overtime win against Duke, the last second victory against Villanova, the overtime loss to Princeton. So this will be a contrast in styles, and whomever can control possessions and whose defense is going to play better in this one is going to go a long way in determining who the victor will be.
Moving along, Dix, over to the ACC, the number 3 Virginia Cavaliers. 6-1 on the season, 2-0 in the ACC play already. We'll host the number 10 Notre Dame Fighting Irish, 2-3 overall. Haven't played an ACC game yet. Looking for their first ACC win against the Cavaliers. That game's at 1:00 and will be available on the ACC network or ESPN Plus.
Notre Dame able to secure a big win over Michigan last week. We talked about that one on the podcast. And they needed that. They needed that big time, and they got the job done. So hats off to the Fighting Irish. They get to travel to Clockner and take on a Virginia team that's licking its wounds after, getting handled by the University of Maryland. But, you know, I think Virginia's going to bounce back in this one. I think Petey Lasala has an opportunity to have a big day at the faceoff dot. Cole Sostead came back from an injury and looked a little rusty against Maryland. I think, you know, having that week under his belt, if he's able to play this weekend, I think it gets better for him. This game is on, I think it's on ESPNU or ACC Network. It's on one of the linear networks, so you'll be able to catch that one. This will be a great game. And you know, Virginia by no stretch is in danger zone. But, you know, they do need this win to get back on track. And Lars Tiffany said it to us in our prep for the game last week. You know, Virginia, they really aren't used to being undefeated in March. You know, they're a team that's had some hiccups over the last couple of years, and they just keep getting better and better. And then, you know, come May, you know, they've won the last two national championships. So I'm interested to see this one. Matt Nunes, you know, had a tough day against Maryland last weekend. How does he respond? And Leon Entenmann being argued as you know, one of the best, if not the best goaltender in the country. So I'm looking forward to watching this one.
In the last top 20 matchup on Saturday, number 14 Yale, 3-2 overall, 1-0 in the Ivy League, hosts the number 2 Princeton Tigers, 5-1 overall, 1 win in the Ivy League against no losses. That game's at 3:30 and available streaming on ESPN+.
Yeah, and who would have thought that at this point, I don't know what people were going to expect, you know, out of the Ivies top to bottom, but if you're going to say one team had two losses coming into this Yale-Princeton game, I think you probably would have said it's Princeton that has the two losses, but it's Yale in this situation, and this is a tremendous opportunity for the Bulldogs to bounce back after a tough, close loss to Cornell a week ago, and Princeton, as you mentioned previous, you know, they continue to excel. They've won games in different ways in this 2022 season. Your guy Chris Brown, he was able to run it against the Penn Quakers, got the game winner in overtime. This game, again, you know, much like the Cornell Penn game, you know, now you're, you know, Cornell Yale have similar personalities, as do Penn and Princeton. Now you get that contrast, you know, Yale, tough, physical, big, against Princeton, maybe a little smaller, but potentially more athletic, maybe a little quicker, just based on what we've seen so far in 2022. So, you know, what team, very similar to Penn and Cornell, like what team will be able to impose its will on the other will go a long way in this one.
Dix, there's two games on Sunday I want to talk to you about. First one is a top 10 matchup in the Big Ten when number 8 Ohio State travels to number 7 Rutgers. That game is at noon, and fans can catch that on ESPNU.
I feel like this matchup, year in and year out, has big tone-setting up implications for each team. They traditionally play each other first in the Big Ten slate. Just seems like whoever the winner is goes on and has a better season. So I think that this game is incredibly important to both clubs. Ohio State coming off of a tough loss to Denver. Rutgers, after losing to Princeton 16-11, reeled off last week two 22-10 victories over Lafayette and Monmouth. So there, I'm sorry, Hofstra was the other win by Rutgers. So when you look at this game, who can stop Jack Myers from Ohio State? I'm assuming it's going to be Russo or Gene Felix is going to take Myers. I think faceoffs are incredibly important. Can the Scarlet Knights play up tempo? They're going to want to play up tempo. I don't think Ohio State's afraid of doing that in 2022, but I think that favors Rutgers a little bit more. Ross Scott has been terrific for the Scarlet Knights. He's taken over the quarterbacking role from Kieran Mullins. So this should be a fun game in Piscataway.
In the final game of the weekend, Big Ten lacrosse on Sunday night on BTN, you're doing this game. It's number 1 Maryland traveling to Penn State. And Penn State's hoping to pull off an upset.
Sunday night lacrosse is back on BTN. Joe Beninati and I will call the game. Can't wait. Maryland, again, rolling heavy. Trap game, letdown game, whatever you want to call it. Maryland's got to guard against that. They do. But this is the start of Big Ten play. So I don't, I know John Tillman's probably preaching that this week to his troops. And they should be ready to play in this game. Penn State, a team that's missed a lot of players. Trainer has been out. Braden Peck has been out. Other guys, Jake Glatz, the faceoff dot's been out. You know, do these guys, you know, I'm not sure the status of those players and more, but can they make it back for the Maryland game to have, you know, as many hands on deck as possible? The goaltending, you know, Alaric Fayak has been brilliant at stages this season, and then other times he struggled. So what goaltender will show up for the Penn State Nittany Lions? But, you know, this is a Penn State team. It's 2-6, and they've got 4 1-goal losses to Cornell. Their latest one was to Bucknell. So this is a team that can play. They beat Yale earlier in the season. You know, they're going to have to really have a special effort on Sunday night to knock off the Terps.
Before we get to the give and go, Dix, I want to just pump the fantasy on Inside Lacrosse a little bit. My game last week, I played the Saturday game. I came in 24th place, tied for 24th place, which wasn't bad because there were well
out of 25.
Out of like 125.
That's cool.
I think I'm figuring out like you have 6 guys each game that you can choose from or on your team, 6 positions. And again, you have $18 budget to share and players have a different dollar value. But if you can get about 20 points from each of your guys, average that, it's pretty good. You can get about 120 points. It should do well, depending, you know, how guys explode or dump. But that's you're trying to get like 120. I had 126 last week and came in 24th. But there were other games where you could have 120 and you might have won it. So this weekend on Saturday, there are 2 different games. Inside Lacrosse broke it down as a Saturday early games, and then they took a slate of games from Saturday late games, and you can play 2 different games. It's fun. It takes not a lot of time to do if you can pick, if you don't belabor the picks too much, and it's fun to follow along the games that way. All right, Dix, here is the give and go this week. Last week, we talked about the NCAA tournament. Let's throw out our brackets. I still have a few teams that can, I still have 3 potential Final Four picks. I think McNamara's bracket was trashed on the first day of the tournament. I think he had Iowa and Kentucky in the Final Four, and they both lost on the first day. But here's today's question. There are 16 teams left. We're recording this on Thursday. There's some games tonight. But of the Sweet 16, there are 5 of those schools have lacrosse programs. Duke, UNC, Providence, Villanova, and Michigan have Division I lacrosse programs. Of the other 11, which schools do you think could have the greatest success if they started a Division I lacrosse program? Now, I'll tell you what those are. Just going around the bracket from the top corner. Gonzaga, Arkansas, Texas Tech, UCLA, Purdue, St. Peter's, Miami, Iowa State, Kansas, Houston, and Arizona. So I'm going to say, I think Gonzaga could have potential. They could control the Pacific Northwest. It'd be the first Division I school playing sort of in that Pacific Northwest. The success of their basketball team, sort of the coolness of the school and the location. Spokane is a little in the middle. It's not Seattle or Portland, but I think they could draw from the success there and kids would want to go there and they could be like that regional school for those kids. Arkansas, I don't think they have a chance. Texas Tech, don't think they'd be very good either. Obviously UCLA could be a hotbed. I mean, they would be a fun school to go. They're in the Conference of Champions, as Bill Walton calls the Pac-12, they have won the most championships and NCAA championships in all number of sports. I think they could be really successful at men's lacrosse. Purdue, I think they could be successful. It's a really good academic school. It's set sort of in the Midwest, and they could they'd have some natural rivals in Notre Dame and Michigan and some other. They could join the Big Ten. I think that's a place where I think they could have some success. St. Peter's? No, I don't think so. They'd have a place to play. You know, they're based out of Jersey City. They'd be able to join one of the conferences. Like the MAC would be a great place for them, obviously, where they play their sports. But I think Miami could be really successful. They could control the, you know, what Florida's women's team has done, drawing kids from the north. I think Miami could be an attraction like that, and they could join the ACC, give them a sixth team. Kansas, I don't know how much successful they would be as a men's Division I lacrosse team. And then Houston and Arizona. I think Arizona probably would have the best bet, and that'd be a really fun school to go to and play lacrosse at. And I think that they could have some great success. Houston, one of the few schools in Texas with an NCAA program, First Division I program. It's an emerging market for lacrosse, but I don't think that they would have the success that, again, Gonzaga, Arizona, UCLA, Purdue, Miami are my choices, my top five.
This one's easy for me. UCLA and Arizona right off the bat. You know, UCLA could be part of that Pac-12 demographic that already has a strong club presence. You know, your Arizona States, you know, Colorado, all those schools. And Terry Reardon, our friend from Hopkins, my teammate from Hopkins, coached UCLA for a little bit when he was living out west. So UCLA and then Arizona, Mickey Miles Felt, you know, really a legend in West lacrosse and well-known figure in the sport of lacrosse, had the Lax Cats up and running decades ago. So Arizona, another one that could be part of that Pac-12 contingent. So those are one and two. And then right on the heels, you know, if it's 2A or 2B is Miami. I mean, you talk about an ACC in the state of Florida. You know, you mentioned the University of Florida women, Jacksonville men. You know, Florida is a terrific place to start a lacrosse team at the NCAA Division I level. So the Hurricanes would be another choice. Now, if I'm looking for a fourth, it would be Purdue, Big Ten. You know, you already have a conference, but I worry about weather, which means they would have to have an indoor facility, which shouldn't be too much of a challenge for Purdue.
Yeah, football probably has to have some kind of indoor
facility. Right. So I equate that to the Northwestern women, you know, out there in Chicago. And you know, Michigan, quite frankly, you know, they're out in the Midwest with that. So those are my top four. If I had a final four of those teams, it would be UCLA, Arizona, Miami, Purdue.
Right. So we're in agreement on that. But Gonzaga.
Yeah. Again,
fifth choice.
Yeah. And I could see that. St. Peter's just basically because A, they're a Cinderella that's running roughshod through the tournament. And how can you not like a school that has an arena named Run Baby Run? That's incredible. When they put that up, I was like, what? Run Baby Run Arena? And then, you know, you bring up interesting points about Houston and Texas Tech. But if I'm thinking of a school in Texas that would be lacrosse, it would have to be the University of Texas.
Oh, sure.
It would have to be the
Longhorns. They could be really successful.
The Burnt Orange, and you know, yeah, that would just be clutch if Texas was able to pull that off.
Now, a lot of these teams have MCLA club programs, but I'm talking about all full-fledged Division I scholarship, treat like, you know, a Title IX sport in there. All right, good stuff, Dix. Thanks for your opinion on that. And let's see. We need the game to expand, and these are some great candidates.
Absolutely.
We'd like to thank our guest this week, Big Red Coach Connor Busick. Best of luck this weekend and throughout the season. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. Tell a friend, share the love. It is free. Also, we love to hear from you, so give us a shout on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse, and I'm simply at D_FLYD. Remember, stay positive, test negative, and as always, enjoy the games.